Now, before we get to the bottom line of what it takes to live healthily, to be 120 to 140, there's about six or eight myths that are perpetuated by the Orthodox medical profession and some alternative healthcare practitioners that we need to eliminate. Because if you follow their instructions explicitly and completely, you're not going to live to be 100. First myth we're going to look at has to do with vegetarianism. And I found this great article that was published by a team from the University of Chicago. It was published in 1947. And they looked at two groups of weanling rats. These were weanling rats that had been just weaned off the mother's breast milk. And they gave one group of these weanling rats a vegan diet. This is a vegetarian diet that absolutely had no animal products in it whatsoever. Just contained grains, vegetables, fruits, and nuts. And they lived on the average to be 555 days, not quite 2 years. They took the second group of weanling rats, and they gave them the same grains, vegetables, fruits, and nuts. But they also added red meat, dairy, and eggs to their diet. And they lived twice as long, 1,020 days, as the vegan rats. Now, vegetarians were quick to jump in and say, well, the reason why those vegetarian rats didn't live as long as the meat-eating rats is because they were not allowed to do meditation and yoga. So let's see if human vegetarians do any better. About 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, May of 1996, I was in Colorado and picked up the local newspaper. They did a study. The state of Colorado did this wonderful study, and they showed that there were 415 centenarians, and they were very proud of this. So they sent out a team of social workers with a five-page questionnaire, and then eyeball to eyeball, asked them the questions on this five-page questionnaire, looking for a common thread. What was it that got them to live healthily to be 100? What they found out was this. Two-thirds of these 415 centenarians were women. One-third were men. So you guys can live to be 100 if you do everything right. They found out that every race, every religion, every culture was represented, so there did not seem to be any monopoly when it came to health and longevity by any particular race, religion, or culture. The oldest person they were talking to in Colorado was 111. The only item on the five-page questionnaire that 100%, all 415 checked and said this was a major factor in their living healthily to be 100, was that they were all heavy red meat eaters. There was not a single vegetarian in the bunch, and that's significant because this was just a random study. Nobody set this study up. They just took all the living centenarians and checked it out. Every one of them ate red meat twice a day, at least. 85% of them still worked after the age of 100. These were not infirm people. They did the family paperwork. They paid the bills. They babysat. They cooked. They cleaned house. They gardened. Number three, 75% took a nip of whiskey every day. Now, there's two things you want to remember about this study. Number one, the twice-a-day thing is the red meat, not the whiskey. Number two, there was not a single vegetarian in the bunch. Now, if you want to be a vegetarian for emotional reasons or spiritual reasons or religious reasons, this is America, and people will support your right to do that. But don't become a vegetarian because people get you panicked and think that vegetarianism is a healthier way to live. It just isn't. There's not a single shred of evidence from either animal studies or human studies that show that vegetarianism is healthier than meat eating. It's really just the opposite. Then there's the subject of exercise. But again, being a scientific type, if exercise is a major factor in living healthily, be 120, then professional athletes should live longer than couch potatoes in America. And so I looked at professional athletes, and sure enough, these guys and gals, even though they spend their junior high and high school and college and their middle years, their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and sometimes, depending on the sport, even their early 50s, they don't live as long as couch potatoes. Couch potatoes live to be 75.5, and the average professional athlete lives to be 62 to 68, depending on the sport. So there's something wrong with this concept of exercise is good for him. Why is it that athletes don't do as well as couch potatoes? Well, that's because athletes sweat more in 5 years than couch potatoes do in 75 years. And when you sweat, you're not just sweating out Gatorade, you're sweating out all 60 essential minerals. And they're called essential minerals because if they're missing for any length of time, you get some horrible degenerative disease, many of which are life-threatening. So who's more likely to die of one of these life-threatening mineral deficiency diseases? Somebody who sweats out quarts and quarts of water every day while training and exercising, or a couch potato who lays on the couch belching in an air-conditioned room saying, honey, bring in the popcorn, I'm changing the channels. Well, the bottom line piece of information here is that you don't need to be an athlete to sweat. You can be a farmer. You can be a contractor working in construction business. You can be a roofer, a plumber, or an electrician. You can be a carpet layer. You can work in a bakery. You can work in a oven room in a Pizza Hut. You can work in one of these State Farm automobile insurance agencies and crank the air conditioning down during the summertime to where you have to wear a sweater and you never sweat at your place of business or work. But you know you're inactive all day, so you belong to a health club and you go do your jazzercise and stair steppers and treadmill, whatever it might be, and you sweat. Exercise without replacing those minerals you sweat out, exercising without supplementation is in fact suicide. If you're going to exercise, that's fine, but be sure you supplement with all essential nutrients, including the essential minerals. Otherwise, exercise will be a negative in your life and not a positive over the long haul. Then, everybody in America has a paranoia about salt. Now, what's the first thing that a farmer puts out for his livestock? Big salt block, isn't it? And there's nobody out in a pasture telling a cow she's limited to one lick a day, is there? I never like to believe that my human patients were dumber than a cow, so I said, look, go ahead and pick up your salt shaker, and you'll notice that lightning doesn't strike you. You can go ahead and salt your food to taste. You can put salt all over your body. Nothing bad's going to happen. And 98% of my patients just loved it. They brought me hundreds of new patients every month that wanted to eat that way. And the 2%, the bean counters, they say, Wallach, we love you and respect you, but we have a high-priced cardiologist that says you're flying in the face of all the weight of medical evidence. You can't tell people they can use salt. They're going to get hypertension and heart disease and stroke. Well, I have been redeemed in this one, in this view. This was a study that was published by the American Heart Association at their annual meeting in Portland, Oregon, July 1997, a little over a year ago. Doctors lack proof that too much salt is unhealthful. After years of telling healthy people that too much salt isn't good for them, researchers still don't have solid evidence to back up that claim. There's actually never been a single study which shows that restricting salt will prevent high blood pressure or hypertension or heart disease. There's never been a single study which shows if you have hypertension, high blood pressure, or heart disease, that restricting salt is of any benefit. That's a total myth. Now, another paranoia in America has to do with saturated fat. Everybody in America is terrified about saturated fat. You're going to plug your arteries with all this gooey cholesterol and saturated fat. My personal credo is that a day without a hamburger is like a day without sunshine. I try to eat a half-pound hamburger every day, and I can tell you I did that today, so I'm feeling fit. Now, 98% of my patients loved it, and they brought me hundreds of new patients every month who wanted to salt their food to taste and eat red meat every day. The 2%, the bean counters, went ballistic. And they say, Wallach, you know, you're flying in the face of all the weight of medical evidence. You can't tell people to do that. I have a high-priced cardiologist that says if you eat saturated fat, you're going to plug your arteries with all this gooey cholesterol and saturated fat. Well, this study was published by JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is the most prestigious medical journal in America, maybe the world. They said, in fact, that if you increase your saturated fat intake by 3% above the national daily average, which is 30% of our calorie intake, you decrease your risk of stroke by 15%. And they went on to say in the study in JAMA that if you increase your intake of saturated fat from red meat, eggs, and dairy by 9%, you decrease your risk of stroke by 45%. Just the opposite of what a doctor will tell you. Then there's this age-old battle between butter and margarine. There's a great study which is called the Harvard Nurses Health Study. They took 90,000 nurses. They gave 45,000 of these nurses butter as their spread and their cooking shortening. They gave 45,000 nurses margarine as their spread and cooking shortening. And after 20 years, they looked at the results and they were shocked because the nurses who had used margarine instead of butter had 75% more heart attacks than the ones that used butter, just the opposite of what most people believe. Margarine, in fact, is the worst type of fat for the heart. It increases your risk of heart disease of many kinds. Margarine increases your risk of cancer, also increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease. So if you have any margarine at home, I want you to box it up and ship it to a communist somewhere. The biggest fraud that was ever perpetuated in the American public is this cholesterol thing. Last year, Americans spent $117 billion for cholesterol testing. $117 billion for cholesterol testing, and it didn't add 10 seconds to the American longevity. Now, how many of you can ever recall a veterinarian getting upset by your dog, your cat, or your livestock's blood cholesterol? Anybody recall that? No. We've known for 75 years that cholesterol is not a problem. It's an indicator. There's not a single disease that's caused by too much cholesterol in your diet, I'm quoting now, too much cholesterol in your diet, unquote, or a high or elevated blood cholesterol. There's just not a single disease. Cholesterol is, in fact, a indicator, not a problem itself. And so knowing all these facts, I used to tell my patients, look, I want you to eat 2 eggs every morning for breakfast. And 98% of my patients just loved it. I mean, these were people who say, gosh, Wallach is all right. He lets you eat 2 eggs every morning for breakfast like an American should. And they brought me hundreds of new patients. They got to use butter instead of margarine. They were able to use red meat, a half a pound of red meat every day, and salt their food to taste. And then there were the 2% of the bean counter. They say, Wallach, we love you and respect you, but we have a high-priced cardiologist that says you're flying in the face of all the weight of medical evidence. People shouldn't eat more than 1 egg a week. Well, I've been redeemed in my view. This was a study that was done by the American Heart Association and reported at their annual meeting in Anaheim, California, November 15, 1995, and they said 2 eggs a day won't hurt. They finally did the study they should have done 60 years ago. They took 141 healthy volunteers between the ages of 35 and 65 who had an average blood cholesterol of 227, which is quite normal. The normal range of blood cholesterol for human beings is 220 to 270. So 227 is at the lower end of the normal range. If you have a doctor who wants you to get your blood cholesterol down below 200, you want to flee from that doctor because they will kill you. If you get your blood cholesterol down below 200, there's an enormous number of studies that show that you increase your risk of death from intracranial hemorrhage and stroke by 200%, liver cancer by 300%, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease by 200%, depression and suicide by 200%. Why would anybody want to have their blood cholesterol down below 200? Well, remember, the average lifespan of medical doctors in America is 58. So why would you want to listen to any longevity advice from a profession whose average lifespan is 58? Now, if doctors lived to be 150, you'd hang on every word they had to say about longevity, wouldn't you? This is the New England Journal of Medicine, which is a wonderful clinical journal. Dr. Fred Kern Jr., MD, wrote this article. It says, normal plasma cholesterol in an 88-year-old man who eats 25 eggs a day. You have to ask yourself a couple of questions. First of all, why was this old dude eating 25 eggs a day? Number one, he might not have had any teeth and couldn't eat steak anymore. Number two, 95% of the weight of testosterone, male sex hormone, is in fact cholesterol. And this was before Viagra, and maybe he was trying to get his libido up. I love arthritis because it's easy to fix. And according to almost all doctors, when you reach 40, 50, 60 years of age, there's not much you can do about rebuilding your bone. You've built whatever bone you can, and the only thing you can do is slow down the loss when you hit 40, 50, 60. And this is by doing exercise, maybe supplementing with a little calcium, maybe taking some estrogen. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not going to take any estrogen. And I know that by seeing a lot of patients that just taking Tums or calcium citrate and calcium lactate and calcium gluconate and calcium carbonate doesn't work very well. And according to the Center for Disease Control, 75 to 80% of all Americans over the age of 50 have arthritis of one type or another, or to one degree or another. According to the Center for Disease Control, 35 million to 50 million baby boomers are going to get arthritis in the next 7 to 10 years, and there's not a single medical treatment designed to fix it or prevent it. That's pretty scary. Now, if you look at the drugs they use, aspirin certainly doesn't fix arthritis. Can cause gastric bleeding and death. Tylenol doesn't fix arthritis and causes 40,000 cases of kidney failure each year, 5,000 which are so severe you need a kidney transplant. Then there's ibuprofen, Advil, and Aleve. Those things don't fix arthritis. They do cause liver damage in 15% of the users. Even if you don't drink, you can get liver cirrhosis and have need for a liver transplant. Then there's methotrexate and gold shots. Those things certainly don't fix arthritis. They subdue your bone marrow so you can't make normal platelets and red blood cells and white blood cells. And if a pregnant woman uses methotrexate for arthritis, she has a high probability of having a baby born with spina bifida because methotrexate actually interferes with the body's use and the cellular use of folic acid, which we know a folic acid deficiency can cause as many as 50% of the cases of spina bifida. Then there's prednisone and cortisone. They don't fix arthritis. They subdue your immune system, which leaves you open to diseases far, far more horrible than arthritis. And we have the fact that prednisone and cortisone will actually accelerate the loss of minerals from your bones. Now, when these over-the-counter prescription medications don't work anymore to relieve pain and inflammation, the only thing left for you medically is joint replacement surgery. They want to put in new knees and hips and fingers and fuse your vertebrae together. And I never like to refer any of my patients in for these procedures because they never work out well. They always have to redo them and tinker with them. I never felt good about sending my patients in for something and being able to look them in the eye and say, go do this, because I knew it never worked. Well, the advantage my patients had over the years is I'm a veterinarian as well as a physician, and we don't have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, major medical hospitalization, Medicare, and Medicaid to pay for nonsensical surgical and mechanical and drug treatment for nothing more than a calcium deficiency disease. So I looked into my veterinary background, and sure enough, we have all these nutritional formulas designed to prevent and cure all kinds of diseases in animals, including arthritis in pigeons, turkeys, dogs, cats, sheep, pigs, horses, cows, lions, tigers, and bears. And I adapted many of these for human use. And the one that works for people the best, I called Dr. Wallach's pig formula. Now, before I tell you what that is, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions here. First of all, how many of you have ever seen that red warning light come on the dashboard of your car or truck? How many of you have seen the red warning light come on? Sure, just about everybody in the room. If you've been driving for any number of years, you've seen a red warning light come on because it indicated you didn't have enough coolant, not enough oil, you've thrown a fan belt, maybe you burst a radiator hose, And a righteous person, a reasonable person, is glad that that red warning light come on, because it's telling you you're going to burn your engine up if you don't go do something properly with that engine. So you pull over to the side of the road, you lift up the hood, you wait till all the steam gets out of there, and you top off your coolant. You, in fact, top off your oil. Ladies, if you have pantyhose on, you can use that as a temporary fan belt. The only hard part is you have to remember how it goes through the pulleys, so you may want to map that out before you actually need it, and keep that in your glove compartment. You can actually use pantyhose, which are quite stretchy. You can use them as a bandage around your radiator hose, and it'll hold it together. It'll bind that radiator hose together, so it'll hold water while you get to a service station. Now, an unreasonable person, when they see that red warning light come on, they're going to be upset. They're going to be miserable. I'm going to miss half the movie. I'm going to miss half the movie Titanic or Saving Private Ryan, whatever it is. No, wait a minute. I don't have to suffer. I don't have to be miserable because of this red warning light. So you whip out your pliers. You cut the wire of the red warning light. You close the hood and you drive on 100 miles an hour trying to catch up on the lost time. And you just disregard that red warning light. You don't see it anymore because you cut the wire. And the reason I share that with you is because when you take a painkiller or an anti-inflammatory for joint pain or bone pain, all you're doing is cutting the wire of the red warning light. It fixes nothing. It is actually criminally negligent for a doctor to give you a painkiller and an anti-inflammatory for joint and bone disease without rebuilding the joint at the same time. When you have pain in your hip, in your knee, in your shoulder, your back, your neck, your fingers, your wrists, your elbows, your body's saying, don't use that joint. That's your red warning light. Pain is a red warning light. Don't use this. Because if you just take a painkiller, an anti-inflammatory, you're going to wear that joint out faster and faster and faster. Doesn't fix anything. Second question, how many of you have ever done that little experiment where you take a chicken drumstick, eat the meat off the bone, put the cleaned up chicken drumstick bone into a quart of white corn vinegar and leave it on the shelf for a month? Every medical student, every nursing student, every dental student, every veterinarian should do that little experiment every month for the years they're in school. It is that important. Because what happens is that this vinegar will leach the minerals out of the bone and leave a rubbery collagen matrix, a bone matrix, which makes up 25 to 40% of the bone weight. 40% when you're a child and 25% when you're an adult. And you'll retain no calcium that you supplement with if you don't build up new bone matrix. That's why doctors erroneously say that if you supplement with calcium, you can't rebuild your bones, because you have to also be building bone matrix at the same time. The last myth that we're going to look at before we get into the bottom line here is cancer. You can get a nutritional protection. This was proved very nicely in human beings almost 2 years ago now by the medical school at the University of Arizona. They took 1,300 people for 10 years in a double-blind study. These were people who drank and smoked and ate fried foods and did all the bad things you're not supposed to. And they gave them 250 micrograms, one quarter of 1 milligram of selenium every day. And here's what happened. They had a reduction in the rate and the risk of esophageal cancer by 71%. Fellas, they had a reduction in the rate of prostate cancer by 69%, greater than two-thirds, simply by supplementing with 250 micrograms of selenium every day. They had a reduction in the rate of colon and rectal cancer by 64%, almost two-thirds, by supplementing with 250 micrograms of selenium every day. They had a reduction in the rate of lung cancer, whether they smoked or not, by 48%. They cut their lung cancer risk almost in half simply by supplementing with 250 micrograms of selenium every day. Then in a parallel study, ladies, from the University of California, San Diego, 250 micrograms of selenium every day reduced the risk of breast cancer by 50 to 80%, depending on the type of breast cancer, and there's absolutely no side effects. And yet doctors don't tell their patients about this. They don't put this information in the waiting room. They don't publish it or post it on the bulletin board. That's because doctors get nothing for giving you this nutritional advice. This coming September will be 41 years that I spent doing biomedical and clinical research in animals and human beings, and I have literally looked at health and longevity thousands of ways over those 41 years. And I can tell you that that would be kind of complicated if everybody had to do that. But if you boil it down to two concepts, it makes it very simple. Two basic concepts. Concept number one I refer to is avoid stepping on the landmines. This is where you don't want to throw away your healthy physical body wastefully. You don't want to smoke. You don't want to abuse alcohol. Having a glass of wine with dinner, maybe a couple of beers on a hot day is okay, but I wouldn't get drunk every night. You don't want to take drugs. You don't want to do street drugs, and you don't want to take prescription drugs if at all possible. According to the U.S. News and World Report, January of 1994, there's 148,000 deaths in hospitals alone each year as a result of drug interactions. It's called polypharmacy, where two or three doctors will give a patient in the hospital two or three different drugs or five different drugs. They're administered correctly by a nurse, but they interact inappropriately, and 148,000 Americans are killed each year by these drug interactions. Drugs, just because a doctor prescribed them, doesn't mean they're safe. Corey Kristen from Houston, Texas, had ADD, attention deficit disorder, not normally thought of as a fatal disease, but the pediatrician who treated him prescribed an antidepressant medication called imipramine, kind of like Prozac or Ritalin, and the kid dies within weeks after getting the prescription. Everybody's upset. Well, the pharmacist didn't put the proper insert in. The doctor didn't read the PDR. Nobody read the PDR and saw that a more common side effect of this drug is death. All you had to do is get this kid off of sugar. No sugar, natural or processed. All you had to do is give him lithium, chromium, and vanadium. And within days, he'd be clinically normal. But they had to give him this drug. Right now, there's 5 million American kids on Prozac and Ritalin and imipramine going to school. American youth is being drugged and totally unnecessary, and all they have to do is be gotten off of sugar. It's criminal to be selling Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and candy in machines in the hallways of our schools and then wonder why kids shoot each other in there. Every one of those kids who shot their teachers and the kids at school were on Prozac or Ritalin. Every one of them was a hyperactive kid. It doesn't mean that every hyperactive kid is going to get that violent, but it means there's a percentage who will. There's some little clues. If they're a teenager and they wet the bed, if they like to play with fire, if they're cruel to little kids and little animals and so forth, the odds these are the dangerous ones. And so if you know a kid or a grandkid who's like that, you want to be sure to get them off of sugar and get them on the lithium, chromium, and vanadium, because there's nothing more frightening than a 14-year-old with a gun or a 18-year-old with a cleaver in his hand who's angry with him. Lastly, if at all possible, concept number one, you want to avoid going to a doctor because given half a chance, they will kill you. If you remember my tape, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, there was actually by August of 1996, there was something like 35 million of those tapes sold already by then. Well, doctors were just in shock. They said, hey, there's no way that we do all those things that Wallach says. We're not that dumb. And one of the things that really upset the doctors out of those 12 little one-liners in there that were meant to stimulate them was a statement that I made that was actually a quote out of Ralph Nader and Sidney Wolfe's study. It was a 3-year study on terrible things that go on in hospitals, and they published this study in January of 1993, and they said that doctors kill, this is a quote now, and they use the kill word, doctors kill 150,000 to 300,000 Americans each year in hospitals alone as a result of medical negligence. So Harvard Medical School says, look, we're going to save the profession from Wallach's lies. Now, I was just reporting what Ralph Nader said, right? But it's Wallach's lies. And so they created a study that they turned over to the Rand of Boston, which is kind of like a Gallup poll that does these studies. And so nobody could accuse Harvard Medical School of tampering with the results. And here's what happened. You notice the title of the article is Examining the Casualty Count. In military terms, casualty count is killed and wounded. This was November 5th, 1996, and this is on the front page of the USA Today. And they said, remember, this is Harvard Medical School in the Rand, not Joel Wallach. Doctors kill 180,000 Americans each year in hospitals alone as a result of medical negligence. Now, you notice they didn't give a range. I guarantee you they didn't, because the upper end of their range was higher than the 300,000 that Ralph Nader gave. They also said that doctors injure 1.3 million Americans each year in hospitals alone as a result of medical negligence. And you add those two figures together, you get 1.5 million casualties inflicted on the American people each year by the medical trade or the medical profession. You say, why aren't people upset with this? Why aren't people marching up and down in front of hospitals with placards? Now, this just came out in March of 1998. This is from the Center for Disease Control. This was in the USA Today newspaper. It was in every newspaper in America. 2 million Americans, 2 million Americans are infected each year in hospitals alone as a result of medical negligence. According to the CDC, it's simply because doctors don't wash their hands. Why are we concerned about Saddam Hussein sending over a teacup full of bacteria when we have one profession that infects 2 million Americans each year out of medical negligence? Now, you add these 2 million infections a year to 1.5 million casualties already chalked up. That's 3.5 million casualties inflicted on the American public each year by the medical profession, and nobody gets upset. Lastly, concept number one, avoid stepping on the landmines. You want to make sure that when you go to a doctor, you get one that knows how to use a stethoscope. According to JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, just about 1 year ago, September 1997, only 20% of the graduating doctors know how to use a stethoscope today. 80% don't know how to use the basic tool of the medical profession. That's because they've learned in 14 years of medical school that it only takes 1.5 seconds to say, get a CAT scan. And according to the Reader's Digest, September 1993, Doctors get, on the average, a kickback of $421 every time they refer somebody in for a CAT scan or an MRI. So anytime a doctor comes to you and says, look, here's all the lab work, here's what I believe you have, and here's our treatment options, you never want to shrug your shoulders and say, well, doc, I don't know, you're the expert, whatever you say. I know that you get three bids and quotes when you put on a new roof on your house and you want to see a testimony book that says they don't get tar in your car paint, leave nails in the driveway, and you get three bids and quotes when you put a new fence around your backyard and refinish your driveway. Don't think your physical body is any less valuable than your roof, your car, your driveway, or your fence. That's concept number one. Avoid stepping on those landmines. Concept number two. Now that you've avoided these landmines, you're in a good position to go on to live healthily to be 100 if you just but give your body all the essential nutrients so it can develop properly, maintain, and repair itself. That includes 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 essential amino acids, and 3 essential fatty acids. And they're called essential nutrients for two reasons. Number one, your body cannot manufacture them. You must consume them either as food or as supplements. Number two, if any one of these essential nutrients is missing for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, a couple of years, depending on the nutrient, you're going to get, on the average, 10 deficiency diseases. If you supplement properly, you have every honest expectation of seeing some significant benefit. Some people will actually get 100% better. Now, my favorite article, which is a very objective article, came out April 6, 1992, 6.5 years ago, The Real Power of Vitamins. And they use the term vitamins here to mean vitamins and minerals. Nobody ever says, honey, did you take your minerals this morning? Everybody says, honey, did you take your vitamins this morning? But they mean vitamins and minerals. The Real Power of Vitamins. New research shows how they may help fight cancer, heart disease, and the ravages of aging. If you haven't read it, I'd urge you to go to a public library, school library, dig it out and read it. There were 6 positive pages. There was only 1 negative sentence, and as you might guess, it was offered by a medical doctor who was asked by the writer of the article, what do you think about vitamins and minerals and trace minerals as a supplement for human nutrition? And here's what he said, quote, popping vitamins doesn't do any good, sniffs Dr. Victor Herbert, a professor of medicine at New York City's Mount Sinai Medical School. We get all the vitamins we need in our diets, and taking supplements gives you expensive urine, unquote. Now, Missouri translation of that is, you're just peeing away your money if you take vitamins and minerals and trace minerals as supplements, because you might as well wad up your dollars and throw them in the toilet. You can get everything you need from your 4 food groups. Well, that little sentence, you can get everything you need from your 4 food groups, has killed more Americans than all the foreign enemies put together in the 220 years of inanition. And I'd rather pee out 50 cents or a dollar a day worth of excess vitamins and minerals and trace minerals. That's cheap insurance. If you don't invest 50 cents to a dollar a day into taking in essential nutrients that's going to help you develop properly and maintain and repair yourself, as sure as God made little green apples, you're going to spend a lot more money in that paying the doctor. Okay, you're going to develop the doctor's lifestyle every time you pay him hard cash out of your own pocket, indirectly through insurance, indirectly through taxes and Medicare. Not a single penny of that money goes to better understand, manage, treat, prevent, or cure catastrophic diseases in kids, breast cancer in women, prostate cancer in men, Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, diabetes. When you pay your doctor, you're paying his mortgage, you're paying his Mercedes payment, you're paying the tuition for his kids to go to Harvard Medical School, or worse yet, you're paying the tuition for his kids to go to Yale Law School. That's all we need is a bunch of Yale lawyers running around. And we got a whole White House full of them now, and look what's going on in there. Well, that's why they call me the Rush Limbaugh of alternative health.